goodness. Celia, Elvis? I'm going to guess Elvis.
Oh, yes. It's Elvis.
It is?
Yeah.
I'm good. I'm on. Yeah. Nothing like a good costume and a fun dress-up day to just get things moving. Good morning. Yes. Okay, wait. I want to do it so you can see that. Queen of Hearts. That's right. Oh, good. Is this okay? Am I showing too much of anything anywhere? Not yet. So, not a good model. But I'm a ham. I love to ham it up. Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. Every time I picked up my head and saw people twinkling in the dark and, and I saw funny shapes of witches' hats that appeared while we were, it's amazing. So, you know, I always say we multiply in the dark, but today it was really fun. I think that you, Linda, you should come up here and take a picture of them and of them, because there's somebody sitting close to you that's a little scary. So would you stand and turn around and look at everybody, please? It's a little disconcerting. Thing. All right, sir, and now we'd like your picture. Yes. Oh, my God, that is so creepy. That is so creepy. Did you get him? All right, very good. Very good. Smile, everybody. Yeah, we got this. We got this. So, yes, indeed. Now he can. Yeah. Thank you, Linda. Wow, that was fun. Okay, so, hi, I'm the Queen of Hearts. Off with your heads! Just kidding. Although I will say, Dr. Holmes, it was lovely of you to bring the perfect reading because it is exactly what we're speaking to today. The title of my talk is The Monster Mash, and I just wanted to have something playful that would also allow me to help you understand the science of mind approach to mashing monsters if they should be haunting you for any reason. But what that means is that for weeks now, I've been walking around going, The Monster Mash. It was a mash. You know, it's like, and then if you, the best video of that is Bobby Pickett, who took the name for the record, Bobby Boris Pickett, because he used a Boris Karloff voice in Monster Mash, right? And the best video to watch is the American Bandstand. He's really, really a hoot. And somehow there's this other guy, Gary? I didn't write it down. Gary, I can't remember his last name, but who was all involved in recording the Monster Mash, also did Alley-Oop. Remember? See, we're of that age where we remember Alley-Oop. Alley-Oop, oop, 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 oop. I know, how fun. There's so much fun in music. Oh, so, and then, Dr. Holmes, I thank you so much for giving us the perfect words and premise for everything that needs to be addressed this morning, because we're going to talk about mashing monsters in ghoulish ways. Here is this profound, short, to-the-point quote from Dr. Ernest Holmes, sitting in the front row this morning. What an honor. Whenever you find yourself brooding over a fear or entertaining an anxiety, do something about it. Isn't that great? I love those short and to the point. You're worried over something, you got some fear stirred up in your life over something, and you got some anxiety going, and he says, when you find yourself in the fear or the anxiety, when you find yourself, so that's our job, to pay attention and to notice when we end up in those places, because then you can do something about it. And that's the message. That's the way we're going to address our fears and our troubles, and we can stand then in this principle that's the science of mind, this great piece of our teaching, and say, I ain't afraid of no ghosts. I ain't afraid of no ghosts, right? So we're going to do the monster mash today. We're going to mash away any ideas of our monstrous problems. We're going to be ghostbusters and use our tools to blast away demons and haunting ideas. Are you on board? Would you like to get rid of all the stuff that scares you? I think we can easily address that today because here's the point. This was an interesting, it dawned upon my realization, this is an interesting point. Where the boogeyman lurks is in the dark corners of our own minds. The boogeyman lurks in the dark corners of our own minds. And so what that tells me is, I like to say, I took this from Terry Cole Whitaker, I wished I'd had made it up myself, but sometimes you just got to do the boogie with the boogeyman. Right? You just got to get up and dance. You got to face your fears and you got to get involved and you got to do something. So we are not mad scientists. We are religious scientists. Am I correct, Dr. Holmes?
That is correct.
Yes, I thought so. And so we got some tools. We got some ways to handle things. And we don't need no magic wands. In fact, the conversation we are about to have is going to empower you in such a great way. You are going to throw away all the sage. You will never again need to have crystals to cleanse your space. You will never again worry about any planet in retrograde. Do you want some of this? We got some stuff to look at today. You won't even have to worry about that relative you don't get along with that has a voodoo doll with your name on it. Because we have a philosophy that encourages action. Do something. We have a philosophy that encourages choice, that it calls us to get personally involved in our own goodwill, and that we teach practical application of a lot of amazing spiritual tools. So Halloween brings out the ghosts and the goblins and the witches and the monsters and the funny people and the great masks. And we get to play in a way that we don't play 364 days of the year. It invites something. And I think there is something about the veil being thin, that we're getting close to All Saints' Day and all of that. So we are in sync and ready to go. And I thought I would begin by telling you, you know, I often talk about seminary. I had such a fun time in school and studying all of this stuff, and I often talk about the components of study, but I don't think I ever shared with you that we also had a component in seminary called Monster Theory 101. Why not, right? I might as well learn how to deal with the monsters. And what I learned was so valuable that I thought it was really important to share it with all of you today on the eve of Halloween, or on the eve of the eve of the eve, the closest we get on a Sunday. I wanted you to know something that I learned when I was studying this in seminary in Monster Theory 101. What we know, and this is important, you might want to write it down so that you never forget it again. All monsters have one thing in common. They do their best work in the dark. Right? Now, think about that. The monsters and our monstrosity, kind of horrendous monster-like thinking, always happens not when we're standing in the full light of spiritual truth, but we get into those dark caverns of not remembering the greater truths of our being, the way in which we are created in the image and the likeness of the Creator itself. Interesting today. Right? Oh, that was funny. It had to be inside my head, I guess. Okay, so going back to that idea, and when Holmes says if you find yourself in a fearsome position, if you find yourself brooding over something or anxious over something, do something about it. Well, get out of the dark. Get out of the dark, turn on the light. That's why, Dr. Holmes, you and I were really there together in sync on the right topic. Turn on that light. I think that, let your how does that song go? Let your love light shine, let your heart light. Yeah, like drunk Santa back there in the rafters. And the other key element is that there's a point where we really need to quit giving the bad guys so much power. Right? Why do we do that? That just cracks me up. It just makes no sense at all. But we seem to be able to do that. So this is how we learn to do the monster mash. We're going to just mash it all out of our mind and stand in a bigger truth and go forward so that we can use these skills that we come to learn about and remember every Sunday morning or when we take classes and all of that. Now, some people like scary movies. There's a big, handsome man in the back row over there in that corner. He loves scary movies. He raised our children on his knee watching scary movies. He especially loves all the classic monster movies. And so if you like that stuff, you should do that. You should play in it. If you like roller coasters, you should go have that thrill because life is thrilling and we should not be limited in any way if you like that stuff. But if you don't like that stuff, do something about it. You know, it's a time where we might get stuck in some worrisome thoughts, and we are invited to change our environment, to change the environment of your own thoughts, of the things that you're thinking about and the kind of the road you're going down. So we want to plant some new thoughts. We want to sing some happy songs, alley-oop, oop, oop. I mean, how could you not be happy singing alley-oop, right? And not only that, I get a memory. I can see a picture of my dad in the backyard walking around singing that song. He loved that song. So sing a new song or turn on your heart light. What is it, your heart light? Turn on your, what is that song? Santa? Love light. Okay, well, somebody should sing it. Or not. Okay, what would the goddess do with that? Turn on your heart light. Just sing it an octave higher. Don't you just love it when Celia is here? All right, so there was a second thing I wanted to be sure and let you know this morning that we studied in Monster Theory 101 while I was in seminary. There's a second important point. And I don't want you to miss this. Things go really wrong when we try to breathe life into dead things. Right? Think about it. Frankenstein, Pet Cemetery, the little boy's puppy dies, and then they make it come back to life again, and it's a monstrosity. And so there's this natural rhythm of life where everything seems to have its own cycle. And we absolutely know this because if you look at nature right now, not so much in our area, but certainly we have trees that are dropping their leaves. And what happens if it's not your yard and the leaves fall to the ground and they're left there, they become a mulch that will then fertilize that plant or tree or bush, whatever it is. And you know, when things begin to mulch and go back to the earth in the way it's that the nature just kind of naturally does, it calls things like earthworms. You know, earthworms are so good for the earth, and so a worm can thrive in a compost pile, and the compost thrives because the worms show up and the other things that contribute to that process of recycling in a very natural way, and it's nourishing future growth. And so there's some wisdom here. It's the way that all of life works together in this sort of perpetual movement. So if we can stand back and look at that in terms of all the things in our own lives that come and go, you know, your kids grow up and hopefully leave home. We have projects, we have programs, we have art things, we have, you know, everything has a lifespan. And what we know as we observe nature is that as we learn to trust that process of life, that what we have called death, which is a great theme, I think we have Vampira over in the corner here, I'm a little bit afraid. Who? What? No? Okay. What we know then is that death is merely this, it's something very organic. It's an organic transfer of energy. Energy leaves the form of the dead leaves, right? Compost comes into the earth, and then it becomes something else in a different form. And we have evidence of this everywhere we look. Have you ever seen in the woods when a pine tree falls, certain kinds of pines, you will then see little young pines sprout up from everywhere where the dead tree has fallen or fell, I don't know. So there's this movement of energy, and I think, isn't it interesting that we have this whole biblical story of the resurrection that shows us that very idea of a life that appears to end, and then 3 days after being in a tomb, the tomb becomes a womb for rebirth, and voila, we have life in a completely different form. It's a major story that we study in all kinds of ways, and that it really is a basic story of the cycle of life. So it's always, what looks like death is always more life, even in terms of our humanity. So it's not ours to try and keep things alive when they're really interested in not being in that form anymore. It doesn't matter what that is or how it looks. I have this little TV once. I had this TV for a long, long time. I don't know. It's probably stuffed in the garage somewhere still. It was just a little black and white TV with kind of rabbit ear antennas on top of it. I bought it in the early 70s to keep in the kitchen so I could watch Luke and Laura. Remember that hot storyline from General Hospital? Oh, it was so... And so I had this little TV, and I loved this little TV. And I'm telling you, life changes in so many ways. It's incredible. Do you ever just stop and look at your flat screen TV and go, how the hell did we get this? You know, how did life get to where everything is just, it's amazing and it's big. And we got our first flat screen TV when my dad was living with us, and he said, I don't like it. All the baseball players, you can see all their hairs on their face, and I don't like it. It's too much, right? But I liked my little black and white TV. And you know what I liked best about my little black and white TV? You know, the little on and off knob. On, off, on, off. It was so easy. And if you didn't like what you were watching or there was something more important on another channel, you went to the bigger knob. Click, 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 and you chose. You had four choices on that little TV. You click, click, clicked it around till you found something better on TV. Yeah, and it worked, right? And sometimes, I had that TV so long, I had that little TV in my office when I was in ministerial school studying Monster Theory 101, and I would be up really late at night after everybody went to bed trying to get my papers done, and I would like to work to the background of David Letterman, but David Letterman in Los Angeles comes in on Channel 2, and Channel 2 is very grainy. So then, you would turn on Channel 2, especially late at night. I don't know why. My husband could explain that he's a signal guy that knows all about that transmission of the, you know, he knows all about that stuff. I don't. But it would get grainy, and so then I would have to move the rabbit ears around, right? Even maybe move the TV a little bit. However, there was also that fine-tune button behind the channel changer. And if you started spinning that puppy around, then that you would see that the TV would come in and out of clarity, right? I love that. See, you have to be a certain age to understand the fine-tune button. The young people would never understand any of this. On, off, and all of that. But the fine-tune button is an important analogy, I guess, because we are all given innately at the time of birth, we have our own fine-tune mechanism that's built in with us. And what we know is that when we tune ourselves in to these great and glorious divine truths, everything in our lives moves differently, right? We get in that divine rhythm, and then it doesn't seem to matter what comes or what goes or how hard it is to turn the TV on or off. Sometimes off is worse than on at my house. And I just noticed that when I fine-tune my own thoughts, my life unfolds completely different. So we tune into, when we do this well, we tune into the ongoing mysteriousness of life. That's what I love about Celia being here. She always brings that. We tune into the miraculous powers of the divine life because we're kind of getting that divine transmission, and so it just brings this great clarity to everything we do. And we begin to see that in this great cycle of life, there is it funny that I'm getting serious and I look like this? I won't get too serious. In this great cycle of life, there's always that element of things coming and going, of doing and undoing, of learning and unlearning. I think that much of the spiritual path is about unlearning. And then there's that way we also, we have the wanting and unwanting. And then wanting again. So we become one with life, and we're moving with that perfect divine rhythm, and then we sort of get into our finite physical being, and something changes, and we have sort of separated ourselves from that greater reality. You can't really separate, but in our mind, where some of those thoughts get a little strange, we can absolutely have a little disconnect sometimes. It's not a bad thing. Holmes says that we're chemists in this great thing called life, and that we're always making stuff, creating. So what do you want to create? How would you like your life to be different? What monsters would you like to mash? These are all very good questions. All you have to do is do something. Choose a direction. Choose a focus. You will find yourself in the dark sometimes. I find myself in the dark sometimes. It's not a bad thing. We have skills. We can turn on the light. So beautifully written, Dr. Holmes. I had forgotten how well you stated that process of turning on the light, and then it just dissipates. Where'd the dark go? Well, the dark is nothing. Then you turn on the light and you see what's actually there and what's real. We face the direction of good. We tune into God. And we're talking about this spiritual idea of darkness. But I want to add one layer that I think you're ready for today. And that is what happens when we are spiritually speaking about fear. Because that's how we started today. Fear and anxiety, he said. Do something. Replace those things. So when we talk about fear, let's be very, very clear, because this is tricky for many people. We are not talking about like real fear, like fear of snakes, fear of public speaking. We're not talking about fear of heights or even weapons of mass destruction. We're talking about a more subtle type of fear that is aligned in what we call the hidden beliefs. Everything we do, especially in the foundation class, is about uncovering our hidden beliefs. They're hidden. We don't realize we have them, right? And so that kind of fear is, here's the formula for it. I would say that the way you know that kind of fear has reared its ugly head in your experience is that it's that fear that distracts you from your good. It stops you from reaching that, whatever that is. It's anything that makes you settle for less than you deserve. It's anything that rattles you or knocks you sideways. Sometimes I get a little knocked sideways. Anytime you are not centered in love. And all you have to do once you recognize it is step away from it and stand in love. Right? So if something's not going right, I can easily, I've trained myself so well, I can easily ask myself, is this coming from a place of love? Or are you standing in that place of fear? Because if it ain't loving, it's fear. So my favorite quote on fear is from The Course in Miracles. You've heard, those of you who come all the time have heard me say it many times. The Course says, when you are afraid, It is a sure sign you are trusting in your own strength. Oh, see, it cannot be said enough. It's my favorite quote, and I just so easily remember it. When you are afraid, it is a sure sign you are trusting in your own strength. Ernest Holmes compliment. Dr. Holmes, may I quote you? All our troubles come from an isolated sense of being. Right? You hear it? This is the same theme. We are in a separated, our state of mind has sort of separated from the truth of the greater whole. And so when I share that quote with you that I've been repeating, it's like, when you are afraid, when you are anxious, do something. Let me read to you the way that quotation continues. Dr. Holmes says, "We must turn to the power greater than we are." When you are afraid, when you are anxious over anything, turn to that power that is greater than we are, the power that put us here, and learn to have confidence in this power. Confess your fears to yourself. Confess your fears to yourself. Don't pretend you're not having an experience. Look at it, name it, so that you can call out the divine quality you would rather have. But he goes on to say, confess your fears to yourself as you stand in this power, and then you will be able to reach just a little bit higher. Oh, ta-da! What a great, great statement of truth. Things get so much, things get better in a much easier way when we don't try to do everything in our own little humanness. God didn't make monsters. We make monsters in our own mind, and then we see them everywhere. And so I have a very funny quote from C.S. Lewis. I thought I should have at least one C.S. Lewis quote today because I am representing a character that he invented, the Queen of Hearts. Did you know I'm the Queen of Hearts, right? You saw the socks and all that. The Queen of Hearts, you know, off with your heads. Queen of Hearts, listen to this quote from C.S. Lewis. This is such a good quote. There are two kinds of people. Those who say to God, "Lord, thy will be done." And those to whom God says, "All right then, have it your way." You know, the interesting thing is that we teach that God. We teach that's what the law does. The law always says, "Okay, you want that? Whoosh, there it is." Right? We teach that. You want it that way? There it is. You got it. We teach of an element of God that we call the law that is always saying, "Yes, my child, yes," to whatever your request is. So that's why we also teach to pay attention to how it is you speak and what it is you think and where you harbor little ghouls in the dark corners of your mind, because as we clear that away, we can stand better in truth. We also know that's why we examine that very important question, as Dr. Holmes, may I quote you? Yes. Every day, I am told that every day of your life, you began by asking yourself, "Who and what is God?" Is that true?
That is true.
Oh, I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. Validated. October 27th, get it in the minutes, somebody. This is important. Oh, it's being recorded. No worry. So there's this little tidbit I do want to say to you, that sometimes we get confused on that statement, "Thy will be done." And I want to tell you, it's not that we surrender our own will to just take what comes. Thy will be done, with a capital T-H-Y, is God's will. And what do you suppose God's will for your life is? Thank you very much. Happy, joyous, and free, and good. All the way back from drunken Santa. But he's right. He's right. What we teach here is God would not will hardship in your life. We may very well experience many encounters with hardship and monstrous experiences that we wish we could sidestep. But that is why we study spirituality, so that we know the greater truth, that we can reconnect. When we get afraid, we can do something. We can reconnect. We can turn the light on. We can stand in a greater truth. So God's will for you is only good. We just have so much free will that we're always sort of getting confused with what that good should look like in the choices that we make for our own life. I would take you right back to that question. If it doesn't feel kind, good, and loving, you're probably not standing in the will for God's will for your life. And I wanted to quote Gandhi this morning. You know what I loved about Gandhi, what I still love about Gandhi, is that practical application of spiritual truth. You know, Gandhi was a doer and left us such a good example, but he boldly faced things that were difficult in life, and he took a stand for people and for people's rights, and he did some many, many, many good things. And I know that all of the things we talk about here on a Sunday morning come together to be, I mean, a lot more than good advice. You know, these are practical skills for spiritual living. These are relevant principles we can use in a changing world. We have a lot of good things. But I also am aware that it's easy to see evil things unfolding around the globe. In fact, it would be, I could even go so far as to say it's difficult to ignore that horrible things happen, and not even around the globe, even in our own neighborhoods. You know, every now and then I see a clip of, I'm going to watch a TV show and there'll be a clip of the news that will start and something will, you know, it's the local news. So you see that horrible things happen, even at the local, in our neighborhoods. Unsuspecting people are impacted by really monstrous kinds of things sometimes. But Gandhi left us with some beautiful wisdom, and it's so rich and gorgeous. This is where I want to end this morning. Gandhi said this: "When I despair, I remember that all through history, the way of truth and love has always won. The way of truth and love has always won all through history. There have been tyrants and there have been murderers, and for a time they can seem invincible. But in the end, they always fall. Think of it, always." Period. And so that's the truth I stand in. The truth I stand in is that religious science view that, yes, indeed, we are chemists, that our own life is the laboratory we work in, that we are in charge of the little dark corners of our own mind, and that none of this is a bad thing. You know, don't beat yourself up when you see that you're thinking scary thoughts. Just know that you have choices. There are other ways you can turn your focus, and you can stand in the light. You can stand in the truth. You can let your heart light shine. And if it gets dark, just carry your special spiritual magic flashlight. And remember to use it when you can't find your way, or call a friend. So that's what I wanted to say today. That's about all I wanted to say today. Now, let's do something important. Let's anchor some good ideas in the words of prayer. So if you'll just get comfortable where you're seated. And I would ask the practitioners and the ministers to just stand and surround the room at this time. Dr. Holmes, thank you. We just breathe. How truly good it is to stand in that consciousness of the founder of this teaching, Dr. Holmes. How good it is to stand in the light. how absolutely powerful it is to know that right where we are, God is. I just feel the love of God filling this room, expanding our hearts with this magnificent essence of joy. Oh, I feel that love, and I see it expressed in the way that we have a willingness to be playful, to allow ourselves to show up and do spiritual work and to understand the symbols behind the masks and the costumes. To know that underneath all of the shenanigans of our lives, there is God. For there is simply no place where God is not. Spirit itself, fully revealing itself, not only here in this room, but we can feel it at the center of our being. That shifting, that moving, that expansion, the opening. We soften our hearts, we open our minds, we allow ourselves to remember again that it is laughter and joy that allows us to take those great big inhales of life and to feel the vibrancy of being alive. And so I know that in this goodness, in the way that we do fine-tune our own being, our own minds, that we align ourselves to this divine idea of expressing beauty and love, of healing that which ails us, of not settling for small living, but opening ourselves with joyous expectations for the goodness of God, the grace of God to fall into our lives. And so we become that vessel that receives this grace, that opens to the healing, that allows that recognition of our oneness with life, with God, with truth. And that changes our very vibration. We are fine-tuned in such a way that we are in the current of the divine radio waves of life, so that there is a clarity, there is a perfect knowing, there is truth revealed, and that is where we experience the healing that we desire to heal. And as this is true for our own lives, we know it is also true for all our loved ones. We surround the city of Santa Rosa and the other areas where they are threatened by fire yet again, and we know that there is this insistency on the part of life to reveal more life. And so we pull back our judgments and we stand firmly in knowing that there is a highest and a best outcome, that there is a perfect rhythm, there is a fine tuning so that animals and creatures find their way to safety. We know that the people that join them to help are restoring sanity and organization and order in the realm of chaos and fire. And we know that fire is that symbol of great power and of new beginnings. And so we stand in this truth. We stand strong. At the same time, we allow Spirit to soften us even more so that our compassion is extended now to every living being that has any experience of fear or worry or concern. We take what we know and we do something. We stand firmly in prayer. We stand firmly in knowing the highest and the best and understanding the way that consciousness works. We will do good things in the world. We will stand in truth. We will love each other. And when we are called to do more, we will be equipped to do more. So I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, Infinite Spirit. Oh, I feel this gratitude moving through me, streaming to and from my heart. I release these words into the law, knowing they are already done. And together we say, and so it is.